This is the best of the Phillies on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
So we got a football game in 2 days, and we got a baseball team. And my guess, this is part of why James is playing this song. He's in a good mood. Game and a half up on the Dodgers, which is a, you know, solid. And we care a lot, Steven Tyler. All right, so let's get to the Phillies, and then we'll get to the phones. Let's address the main things from the weekend, which I don't know that there is a main thing, because there's a few different things that come to mind from my standpoint this weekend that's near the top of the board. John, biggest thing that stood out to you this weekend with the Phillies, and certainly this goes for everyone, at 215-592-9494. What stood out to you the most, John, with the Phillies this weekend? Two different series, of course, because we're combining the Braves and the Brewers. What hit you the most?
I thought yesterday the fight, you know, we were down big again early. 4-0, and then we were down 5-1. And that, you know, this team battles. And I love that about us. And it never feels too far out of reach. And I, you know, I don't know, it kind of feels right for me. You know, like, I know you always accuse me of being too hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
This team validates that hope, and I love that. And it's so rewarding. And, you know, I appreciate these guys the way, you know, it's never really too far out of reach.
So, a lot of ways to go. I'll tell you the thing that hits me the most, and it's going to be combined with probably two other names.
But one last thing. Yeah. The Harrison Bader thing, mm-hmm. again, the way he breaks it down very simply, and the way he said it was high support. He said keeping it high energy and high support at all times for his teammates. You know, that's so important to him. And, you know, that's why they bring back a guy like Garrett Stubbs. That's part of why Garrett Stubbs is here.
Well, third catcher usually is a guy you're going to bring up. Look, the biggest thing that stood out to me is Nick Cassianos is a part-time player. Now, the irony is
Does he understand that?
Yeah, now the irony is he actually started 3 of the last 4 games, but it's 3 of the last 5 games, so he didn't start Thursday, he didn't start yesterday.
And he got replaced for defense in one of those games.
Yes. So now, what goes with that is sort of part of what John's talking about, Bader and his effectiveness, Marsh and his effectiveness. Yeah. I was going to say Gabe Kapler.
Rob Thompson.
No, yeah. Well, like they stood. No, I'm getting my. Who was the Phillies manager?
Gabe Kapler.
Yeah. No, who was the Phillies outfielder? Kapler.
Kapler. Max Kapler. Kapler.
I was like, what the hell? Okay. So they didn't cut him. Remember, if you go back 2 weeks ago when they got Bader, we thought, hey, he might be gone. So it was Rojas sent down. Rojas not brought back up. Kapler is being leaned on. And the combination of the outfielders is such that I appreciate Rob Thompson doing this, because you can't walk yourself off the plank. You got a shot to win a World Series. Don't screw it up by playing the wrong guy every day. John Cassiano's part-time player. Now, he's not a nothing player in that. He's still going to play. But you know what? It's interesting, because there's a whole nother year on his contract. Again, and I'll say it for the second time today. I'll deal with that then. It's like the Saquon thing. I'll deal with whether Saquon breaks down in 2 years if I have to. I'm just telling you, you cannot try to win a World Series and play Cassianos, who's been one of the least effective players all season. And I appreciate
the numbers
that as they come down the stretch, they're not screwing around with that. That was big from this week. To me, that is a big sign of their focus and their intent of what they're trying to do. I appreciate it. Yeah. I also liked that Lizardo looked good. And Lizardo and Ranger are obviously in a battle for who's going to get the second start in the playoffs. And, of course, they signed Buehler, which is Seltzer Buehler.
Yeah, I'm excited about this.
I am too.
Yeah, last possible day to add a guy, and he could still play in the playoffs for you. It's all-time flyer. Why not?
Right.
You know, this guy in 19 World Series innings has a 0.47 ERA in the World Series. He has been a playoff stud. He closed out the World Series last year.
Yeah.
Worth a shot. You know, this guy comes up in the biggest of moments. Get him in here, see what happens. Why not? Also, intimate knowledge of the Dodgers. He's played for them for his entire career, knows the Padres well, all that. So, all-time, why not?
It's also some if Aaron Nola doesn't get it all together insurance.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you
it's insurance, period. You don't have guys. Like, there's no one on the roster like this guy, pitcher-wise. Like, he is the most accomplished postseason pitcher on the roster right now, today. Wow. Boom.
Not counting Wheeler, you're saying.
He's got 19 World Series innings that he's 0.47. He's won two World Series. Like, this guy's probably, I don't know if he's as good as Wheeler,
Why was he so bad?
So, I think this was just a weird situation where Boston is in a different spot. They're contending for a playoff spot, but they're young. They're growing. Yeah. They knew he wasn't going to be on their postseason roster. I'm guessing they said, hey, go to the National League, buddy. He was like, no problem. And it's a go somewhere else and see if you can get right type of thing. He was good last year. He's only 31. Just feels like one of those things. You know, this happens. It's baseball. It's weird like
that. I thought it was an interesting and good signing. All right, let's go to the phones. Phillies and Eagles, tons to chew on. 215-592-9494. Stephen Egg Harbor kicking us off. What's going on, Steve?
Yeah, what's going on, man? Can't wait for football Thursday. But I don't think we're going to be using Saquon as much as we did last year, like John said. I think a lot of teams are going to do what Spags did in the Super Bowl. They're going to put maybe nine guys up front if they can, as many as possible, to try and stop them. And I think because, you know, like people in Philly, so many people doubt Jalen Hurts, the NFL's teams are going to force him to beat him first, and then
it's possible. You know, it's not going to be nine because you can't. I mean, nine is you're just going to get crushed. But I get your point. Look, I would love to know, John. Do you have a sense? Was it so unusual what Spags did compared to what other teams did? I mean, did he actually load it up that much more than other teams? Could you tell?
You can't. No, it wasn't anything too unconventional. I mean, we know what Spags does. You mean, are you talking?
Well, my point is, like,
in what situation?
Well, Steve, the whole game. So, Steve, my point is that it obviously the narrative has been Spags loaded off. That's why Saquon struggled. That helped Jalen obviously go over the top. And, you know, that, like, everyone understands that. But did he actually load up so much more than Washington did or the Rams did or the Packers did?
I think
it was
more a combination of, like, timely run blitzing, you know, overloads in specific areas at the perfect time in anticipation because he did understand the tendencies and everything else.
Sure.
So that I would say that's what I always thought.
I mean, Steve, the fact that that was the only time that it happened the whole year. I mean, I don't know. I'd looked back. I'd have to see if there was like one other game that Saquon didn't get going. Maybe there was one. But I can't imagine, Steve, that defensive coordinators didn't try to load up against them. So the Spags thing doesn't give me much concern on the Saquon front. I'll just put it that way.
Well, you sure know the Rams didn't do it because he got like 470-yard touchdown runs.
I'll also say this, Steve, and James brought this up in the offseason a couple times. One of the theories is, and Steve, good call kicking us off. One of the theories is if you load up, well, obviously that has a tendency to stop running backs. If the running back gets through that, if there's not a safety playing center field, so to speak, then like, bye-bye, you know? And that's where a 12-yard run can turn into a 70-yard run. Because if the safety's back, all right, running back gets, you know, past the linebacker, safety comes up, boom, 12-yard gain, first down, it's not a touchdown. But if the safety's up there and Saquon makes one guy miss like that, touchdown. And he did that, you know, five or six times last year. 215-592-9494. All right, up ahead, your chance to win Phillies tickets on our show today. We'll tell you how you can. Phone calls and all these topics. Busy day. Great day. It's the fall. It's football season, and the Phillies are playing good baseball on 94WIP.
Hey, if you've got those old drafty windows or those cheap ones that came with the house, now is the perfect time to get them replaced before the cold weather hits. And Window Nation is the company I recommend.
Exactly. I replaced the windows in my house with Window Nation, and it was such a game changer. They're a company you can trust, and they know that new windows are an investment, and they make it work, and they may work hard to make it affordable for you.
And their crews are awesome. They're actually going to be at my Shore House next week fixing a window. And what I know they're going to do is they're going to get the job done in a day or less. And with a team that has over 10 years of experience on average, you can be sure they'll install your windows right the first time.
And right now, the deal is incredible. Buy two windows, you'll get two free. Plus, you'll pay nothing up front. That's zero down, zero monthly payments, zero interest for 2 full years. Seriously, you won't pay a dime until 2027. But hurry, this sale ends on September 30th.
Don't wait. Just go to windownation.com or call 866-90-NATION.
You've been listening to the best of the Phillies on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Welcome back. Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Gill, you guys with us. 215-592-9494. Back to all your Eagles calls in just a couple minutes. And a big thank you here. We got to give to our friends at PDQ Signature Systems and Slices Pizza in East Falls. They brought us some lunch. Hugh, this food is delicious.
Yeah, it was real good, man. I like the, what was that, the boneless chicken wings?
Yeah, they're good.
You know, we're not, as men, you know, that's not the, our go-to. You got to get the bone in. But they were really, really good.
Did you have the regular buffalo? Because they also they told me there was mango habanero. But you're not a big
those
spice
are good.
Guy.
I had a
did
couple
of
those. They're pretty
what,
good.
What, was that the ones like they, with the glaze on it?
Yeah.
They weren't overpowering.
Oh, well,
they
that's
were
good.
Pretty good. No, it wasn't like an overpowering spice. They were really good.
Everything was good. They brought steaks. They brought pizza. They brought me an eggplant sandwich here, which is
that's
delicious. Everything is good. If you run a food business, you need to talk to our friends PDQ Signature Systems. And if you're around East Falls, stop by Slices Pizza for some great food. In fact, head over right now for have some lunch. It is time for us. It is noon on Friday. You know what that means. It's lunch, but it's time to talk to our guy, Scott Fransky, sponsored by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm, as the Phils win a big series out in Milwaukee. Scott, how you doing?
Scott. Doing great, guys. How we doing?
Pretty good, Scott.
Well, we're good. We got a win over the Cowboys last night, but, you know, we're still yelling about things. That's what we do around here. But, Scott, at least the Phillies are making us happy. Scott, that was an impressive series victory in Milwaukee, and just the whole – it felt – like, the intensity I felt watching those games was October-ish. I mean, that first game, the back and forth, the comeback. And then yesterday, I mean, that was great pitching by Ranger.
Terrific. I mean, Ranger gets some traffic on the bases, but, man, he can get out of some jams and really, really pitched well. I thought he was terrific. I really did.
Well, he was, and the Phillies really have bounced back since what happened last week against the New York Mets. And Scott, one of the things that has been evident is has been Ranger and the other pitchers since they left New York. It feels like the pitching staff here, Christopher, Ranger, they've pitched pretty well. I mean, and they have to without Zach Wheeler. But I feel like Ranger specifically since Wheeler went out has pitched his best baseball in a while.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and, you know, he talked about it that first start back at home. I guess that was against Washington, I think, or no, Seattle, when, you know, right after the news. And he said, you know, it's time for me. I really need to step up. And he's done that. He looks really, really sharp. Command has just been impeccable here of late for Ranger. And again, I know there's some traffic on the bases and there's some, you know, there's some soft hits and whatnot mixed in there that get you into some situations, but all in all, he's pitched great, and you know, to match Freddy Peralta yesterday, 0-for-0 was really impressive. And you know, what was a important game to win a series on the road against a team you might face a month from now. So who knows?
Scott, talk to me a little bit about how much of a shot in the arm Harrison Bader has been for this team, and with the defense, with the two platoon things, and all of that. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes such a difference. To have one guy out there in center field. I mean, you talk about championship teams, they're strong up the middle. And, you know, the Phillies, I think they have their blueprint, you know, going forward right now with the way Harrison is swinging the bat. He brings a lot of energy. He's a smart player. He's a winning player. He does everything defensively. He's been hot offensively. That may not stay. It may not be like that all the time. But it's allowed the manager to really just plug him in center field every single day. You know what you're going to get defensively. He's making, you know, getting big hits at the bottom of the order offensively. And it allows, you know, Rob to kind of, you know, tinker with the edges, you know, the corner outfield spots based on matchups for, you know, each and every day. But the center field looks like it's locked down right now.
Yeah, Scott, let's talk about the edges, the corner outfield spot. Yesterday before the game, and it was against a righty, and it was the two lefties in the lineup. It was Marsh in left, and it was Kepler in right. Topper was asked, you know, this really looks like it's a double platoon, left and right. And the left one we knew about. That's kind of been that way for a while. But the right field one, that feels like it's been there. Just no one wants to say it fully out loud. And now it's hard to say anything, but it's a platoon. What's your thought on how the Phillies have handled it? Because I think they're doing the right thing right now based on what they're getting out of Kepler and Castellanos.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's too many other ways to go. Rob was, you know, what, you know, Rob was kind of pointed. He said, "Hey, if you guys want to call it a platoon, go call it what you want. That's fine by me." He said, "What I'm trying to do is put the best lineup each day out there." He said, "Now is the time just for winning." And that means having to, you know, make changes in the lineup on a daily basis based on, you know, the matchup of the pitcher that particular day. And more than anything, I think it's based on who's hot right now. And, you know, Kepler's been swinging a pretty good bat, and he's probably going to play against most right-handers the way it is right now. And obviously that means a loss of some at-bats for Nick Castellanos. I don't think it's unheard of that he would start again against a righty, you know, here and there going down the stretch. But I do think you're going to see a lot of Max Kepler out there.
Scott Fransky with us here on a Fransky Friday as we talk about a Phil's team coming off a series win in Milwaukee. They head to Miami tonight, and then the Mets come here next week for a big series. Scott, let's talk about Aaron Nola. He's the one guy on the pitching staff that right now I think we're worried about because it's just not looking right. I heard you the other night talking about his outing, and it really, you framed it interestingly because you look at overall, it's like that wasn't good. But the first five batters, they all score. And then after that, if you look at his game, it was good for the next five innings. Where do you view Nola right now? Because they need him to get right to use him in the postseason.
Yeah, they do need to get him right. There's no doubt about it. Because, you know, you can say what you will. You know, and again, I framed it that way because, again, you're talking about five innings of one-run baseball. And he pitched really well after that. But you can't ignore the fact that it's a 5-0 game at that point or a 6-0 game at that point. And everybody plays a little bit differently when the game gets out of hand one way or the other. It's just human nature. So it's a different, it's been a real struggle. And, you know, I think two starts ago, we saw the velo was back up. Three starts ago, his stuff looked really crisp. I mean, really crisp. It was as good as we've seen him all year. Three nights ago, not as good. I still think there's little tweaks going on mechanically that he's trying to center in on, staying, you know, on top of the baseball and driving down through the zone. I think you look at his fastball and it's just everything is thigh high and above. And that's not the kind of pitcher Nola is. He needs to be down around the knees. And when he does that, he's pretty successful. And I think that's a real product of being able to stay on top of the baseball, stay behind the baseball with his delivery. And I still think he's going to start a game in the postseason. Unless something drastic happens between now and the end of the season, I still think he's going to be one of the starters for the Phillies, you know, if they need four starters in a playoff series.
Well, you would think he would be, and especially with the lefties they have, that it would make sense to me to mix a righty in between one of them. So, Scott, we anticipate it'll still be Nola, but if it's not, Taiwan would be the next guy up. And then the name on my mind now, I'm interested, is what do you think they're getting here in Walker Buehler, who's now down with the Iron Pigs, but I imagine he's going to be up here soon, maybe to take a start or two. He's a guy that's had tremendous postseason success. Now, he didn't pitch well in Boston this year, but one of the better postseason pitchers probably the last 5 or 6 years. What did you think of that signing and when we might see him here?
Well, what I thought of the signing was it's a good, low-risk, high-reward kind of play. And maybe he does turn out to be something that they can use down the stretch. I know it's not been a good year for him. I know he spent a lot of time on the phone this week discussing things with Caleb. He's looking for things the way he wants to feel, and Caleb's trying to give him some things to work on when he goes out. He's going to start for Lehigh Valley. He's going to start a week from tonight for the Phillies at home against Kansas City, assuming the plan stays the same. There's no rainouts or anything, you know, changing the plan, but it sounds to me like he'll get that one start. After that, it remains to be seen. I think a lot of it will depend on how he looks, how the other guys are feeling, whether the Phillies feel like they need to give guys extra rest, how they might want to line it up for the final 2 weeks of the season, that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued by it. I know, you know, again, like you said, he's got a lot of postseason success. Even last year wasn't that great during the regular season, was pretty good during the postseason. So it could be one of those plays that gives you a lot of value for very little risk.
Scott Fransky, let's end with this. The Phillies are in Miami this weekend, and then we all know what's next week. The Mets come in here for four games. So right now the Phillies have a six-game lead. obviously those games were important for the Phillies to hold a lead and kind of get closer to clinching a division. But, Scott, how important do you think next week is psychologically for the Phillies? Because you look at the way the bracket is set up, and if they're the two seed, they're going to play the 3 versus 6. And that looks like the winner of the West against the Mets in the first round. So we could see the Mets right away in the first round of the playoffs if the Phillies do get the 2 seed. Is it as big of a deal as we make it out to be? Do you think the Mets are a thing to the Phillies, or have we just made that a big thing because the results have gone the wrong way a lot this season?
I mean, I think you probably have to say it's a little bit of both of what you're talking about. I mean, I think that's got to be in their heads a little bit. I think it's more so about going to New York than it is playing them in Philly. But again, if you face them in the postseason again like you did last year, you know, they came in and stole a game in Philadelphia, the first game of the series, won with the ace on the mound. They rallied late. They got the win. And they're a really powerful offense. So I think more than anything, to go out there and pitch well, some timely hits, play well in the series, I do think that goes a long way towards not only improving their confidence, but maybe knocking the Mets down a little peg and not letting them feel those good vibes that they felt, you know, this time last year when things were really rolling and when they came into CBP and stole that game one.
No doubt. It's going to be a big one. Phillies, Marlins this weekend, and the Mets come in for Scott. We appreciate it as always. Have a great weekend, and we'll be listening.
Have a good one, Scott.
Right. You guys don't spit on each other, please.
Okay? No, we don't believe in that, Scott.
No, we're anti that.
A lot of other people do. We're not spitters.
All right, boys.
Thank you, Scott. There we go. Scott Fransky with us. Hugh, that's – go ahead.
Speaking of that, never mind. I shouldn't bring it up because I might not. Never mind. I'm going to leave it alone.
Self-edit?
Yeah.
Self-edit. All right, one more quick thing on the Phillies, then back to your Eagles calls. Hugh, the Phillies are 6-up, okay? So
Yes. Next
week, barring something drastic, I still think the Phillies are going to win the division, and I don't think next week is really going to change, right? The 6-up's a big cushion.
Mm-hmm.
They have to play at least decently against the Mets from my psyche.
I tell you what. Well, they do have to beat the Mets, in my opinion.
They need at least a split next week.
Yeah.
At least a split.
Yeah, it has to be one where you're not getting sunned. And you know what I mean by that? Like, you know, have you said, guys say, you're sunning me?
Yep.
Like, you treat me like a little boy? You can't let the Mets little boy you, because they have little boy you.
Well, and if you look at the way this looks like it's going to end up with the bracket, the Phillies look very likely to get the 2 seed. And Hugh, the first, that would mean they'd play the winner of the West, probably with the Dodgers. Dodgers-Mets. I mean, like, it's hard to avoid them. So we'll see them here next week. Phillies in Miami tonight against the Marlins this weekend. And you're right, Bader's been awesome. I mean, that catch he had yesterday in the ninth inning, great. They got a well-pitched game at a range. It was a good series win by the Phillies. All right, 215-592-9494. That's how you hop in. We'll get back to everyone's phone calls. Your reaction to Jalen Carter, I would suspend him for next week. If it was up to me, if I was Sirianni, he wouldn't play next week. Where do you come down on Carter? Jalen Hurts, the offense, the defense, the A.J. Brown stuff was just wild. We'll come back and we'll talk more about Kevin Petullo, his first game as Eagles coordinator. It is the Midday Show on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Everybody know Jack Daniel's Tennessee whiskey is my favorite whiskey. And my folks at Jack Daniel's just dropped a new flavor. It's called Jack Daniel's Blackberry. It's the real deal, folks. A smooth, sweet taste. Perfect to enjoy with friends. I like it straight. Also had it in the locker room punch that they made the other day with the berries and the Sprite and everything. That was great, too, but I definitely like it straight. It has a bold, vibrant taste and an aroma of creamy vanilla, toasted oak, and a hint of honey. It's going to be my new tailgate drink this season, people. Jack Daniel's Blackberry, coming soon to your local fine wine and good spirit stores. Celebrate responsibly.
This is the best of the Phillies on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
It is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. We are the Rally in Royersford at McGurk's, presented by Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey. Terrell Owens will be with us at 5 o'clock, along with Hugh Douglas with us at 5 o'clock. Be here for the fireworks. If you're not here, you should at least listen to it. Joining us now, fireworks as always, is the great Larry Anderson. What's up, L.A.?
L.A.
How you guys doing? How's everybody?
Oh, dude. We're feeling good, brother. We're feeling good.
Nice. I'm still trying to get over my jet lag. I learned that from Jeff Stone. When Jeff Stone got called up from Hawaii to the Phillies, I asked him how he's doing. He said, "Oh man, I still got them jet legs." It's jet lag.
Jeff Stone, man, I haven't heard that name in forever. Yeah, that's a real throwback. You got any good Pat Combs stories while we're at it? Anything Bruce Ruffin? Just trying to think of guys from the same era.
About that time.
Yep. Monday's win. Best win of the year for you? It felt like that to me watching that. It was completely unexpected, I thought.
Yeah, I think it was a tremendous game. And I think just it had to do wonders, I think, just for the Philly psyche. I think just getting down early and not doing a whole lot, and then all of a sudden back and forth, and you know, every time they the Brewers answered the bell, the Phils answered it right back. So it was just a great game, and it was tremendous.
So I want to try to get into the psyche of not this specific clubhouse. I'm not asking you to talk for them, just in general. In that, so they get swept against the Mets, and we as fans feel miserable, right? Then they have the win against the Brewers, and we as fans feel great. Now, the message from the team is always, it's a long season, we know it's a long season, so on and so forth. But there must be some sort of up and down feeling when things are going well and things aren't. So I guess what I'm trying to ask is, like, is they're saying they're calm, but when they get swept and look horrible against the Mets, are they really as, hey, long season, we're just looking to the next one, as they say they are? Or is there a little bit of what we feel when we're watching it inside the clubhouse when things are going particularly well or particularly poorly?
I look at it this way. We're all human. We're all, you know, and a lot of times basically very similar. I don't see how they can say the Mets aren't in their head. If the Mets aren't in their head, then why can't you win a game there? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And for me, if they're not in your head, then prove it. But they can't. So right. I think we have to hope that whenever we play the Mets, that if we do, we have home field advantage. Because I don't see them winning there.
Wow. It's just like that. You don't think we can do it.
Well, why aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point.
They're facing the best we have.
Right.
And we didn't win.
Well, so let's hope we win that division.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, both trade deadline acquisitions looking great at this point. Durand, obviously, but Harrison Bader not only has been a good player, but the attitude feels like something that they've needed. How much can the attitude of a guy who seems fearless, kind of cocky, that sort of thing, do you think that can help a clubhouse in injecting energy like he appears to have?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, but energy like that is great as long as you're doing stuff. I mean, if you're going up there and punching out all the time and you got great energy, it's not going to help the club a whole lot. And so I think it's the energy, but it's also the energy with results. You know, personally for him, doing things, base hits, running the bases, we'll leave out the throw from the outfield, but that energy is great. I think it's tremendous. And I think getting Stubby back, I would imagine a lot of faces in that clubhouse lit up having him back, the energy that he brings. But you have to produce with that energy too to make it worth something. And I think that's what he's doing. I think he's throwing his energy out there, but he's showing these guys like this, let's have fun. Let's come out and play this game and, you know, show up a little more, show a little more excitement, a little more, you know, getting after it. And, you know, he's a different cat, and I think that's good for the clubhouse.
Well, listen, you tell Stubby was back in LA because all of a sudden there's club music playing behind Rob Thompson in his post-game interview the other day. So you could tell he's back. So I think the bullpen feels like it's in a pretty good spot, but the one now seemingly big issue is Orion Kerkering. What are you seeing from him?
I don't know. It's hard to say from a mental standpoint because you're not in his head, and I can't gauge that. I've heard a lot of people say the moment's too big for him. Uh, not you know, on air, not you guys, but the people I talk to, they just think, well, they think the moment's too big for him. And he's been in the back end of the bullpen for a while. He's pitched some good games back there and has gone on streaks where he's pitching great. And I don't know if it's, you know, coming down to more crunch time or feeling like he has to do more. But it comes down to the command. You have to be able to throw strikes. And like he goes through stages where, like, I look at control as being able to throw a strike, command being able to throw a good strike in the strike zone where you want. He's lost that ability or he loses that ability at times to have that, even the control just to throw a strike. But I think if he could get in his head, I hesitate saying it because you hear it all the time and you're probably sick of it, but if you can throw a fastball down in the zone every now and then, you're going to have a little more success. Baseball proves that. I mean, you watch any game, you watch guys that can pitch at the knees, they have more success. That's just plain and simple. I look at Stott the other day, who's swinging a bat great, playing great. He went up at the plate and took three pitches, all at the knees, three in a row. He didn't swing one, thinking they're low, and he gets called out on strikes. Like that, there's so many times where I look at games like that and I go, doesn't that register with anybody? Doesn't that register with our pitchers if they watch a game? Don't they see that? Can't anybody recognize that? But I think that's, you have to be able to do that. I think if he would do that more, with his stuff is good. There's no doubt about it. But Duran's stuff is good too. But if you throw it, you know, thigh high to the belt in the middle of the plate, you're going to get hurt. And if you can't throw it in the strike zone, you're definitely going to get hurt if you're walking people. And it's just, I think he's just got to get to him, into himself, and just convince himself. Sometimes you go through struggles like this, you go, oh no, man, what have I lost? Am I doing? I don't know what's going on in his head, but I think you get back to where, even if you're struggling, you go, you have to lie to yourself sometimes a little bit and go, I can do this. And really understand that you've done it before. He's done it before. So I think he needs to somehow get back into that frame of mind of that he's done it before, that this isn't, it shouldn't be that tough. Don't make it that tough on yourself. I don't see a mechanical thing different with him from any other, you know, from past games. So it's more than anything, I think it's a mental thing. Something gets in his head where the three things you can think about that I talk about, that I used to talk about when I was coaching, the three things you can think about when you're pitching. I have to, I can't, or I'm going to. And I think he's letting a lot of this, I have to and I can't, into his head instead of I'm going to. You know, I can't hang this pitch. Go ahead.
It seems like with Kirkering, when things go bad, he starts to unravel. It's funny to watch him versus Taiwan, right? So he's got way better stuff than Taiwan Walker. But yeah. Taiwan, they could hit a ball 700 feet, and he's the same guy the next pitch. He seems completely unaffected by it. Whereas Kirkering, if things start to go wrong, he doesn't get a call that he thinks is a strike, then you can almost see it in his face. Maybe I'm projecting, but it feels like when things are going well, he is fine. But when things get tight, he starts to unravel a little bit. And that, you know, you're nervous about that because he's going to be in there in big spots in the playoffs. And it does seem like a mental thing when he's up there.
I think it's so important to, and I think you see that when the leadoff man gets on base. I think that's where I see it maybe a little bit if it's there, that, and it's so easy. The leadoff guy gets on, whether you walk him or base hit, whatever, the wheels start turning, oh no, here we go again. And if you, once you get that going in your head, you're done. It's just, I mean, you can't let that come into play. I mean, you have to fight it, and if you have to disengage and get your head straight, get your thought process back to what you're going to do with that baseball and not what you can't do or what you have to do. So, and I think, I mean, I do think it's a very simple fix, but you have to recognize it, and before you can try to fix it, you have to recognize that there's something going on there wrong.
I'm sorry.
We got
turn down
going.
The speakers, guys.
We got things going on here, Ron. Right. I can see that for sure. Yeah. LA, this is going to be a question that we're going to be debating until, you know, the game actually happens. But as of right now, who would be your game two starter behind Chris Sanchez?
As much as I think I'd love to see the left-hander split up Suarez and Sanchez and Suarez.
Mike wants you to say Nola. Mike wants you to say Nola. We're not putting Nola. Yes. Come on.
Come on, LA.
for me, that's their decision. They make the money. I would right now, just from a success standpoint, I would say Sanchez Suarez.
There it is. Sorry, Ike. Sorry, Ike.
Good answer.
I think because you want to, and I think they want to separate the lefties, Suarez and Sanchez. I think they'll go with Nola in the second.
There we go.
Wow. Final question, LA. Yeah. We didn't ask you this last time, but now that it's happened twice, I have to ask you what you think of Bryce Harper wearing the opponent's colors.
No, no, no. We were doing so well.
Well, look, we all love the Attaboy Harper shoes and gloves and yellow.
LA, did you get your rivalry pack for
the
next series?
When you said it's happened a couple of times, I thought you were going to ask me about, do you think they're going to work on rundown?
God forbid, right? But,
by the way, happens the exact same time he wears the rivalry pack. We screw up the rundown. So, yeah. It's bad luck. I think we can all say it's bad luck.
It's a different look, but that's Bryce. That's Bryce.
He is the showman.
He has a reason, so I'm going to leave that with him.
All right. Sounds good. All right, L.A. Well, hoping for another win tonight. Let's win that series, get out of there, and then deal with the Marlins and the Mets next week. Appreciate you as always, L.A.
You got it. Can I say go Bills and go Eagles too?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Go Birds.
You can give a go Birds. Yeah.
All right. Go Birds.
There it is. All right. There he is. Larry Anderson. Man, I give L.A. a lot of credit.
Yeah.
Because L.A. doesn't like the rivalry pack, but he was smart. He stayed away from it. He's learned a lot. He's learned a lot, that Larry Anderson.
By the way, it's Lizardo game two if they're at home and Ranger on the road.
I think Ranger handles the road better than Lizardo probably does. Rangers got guts. I trust Ranger with a big start in the playoffs, even if he doesn't have the stuff.
The Mets series is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Walker Buehler starting game four, Ike, too. We're getting Knowles out of there.
Out of there completely, huh?
No, I'm just kidding.
Wow.
Either Walker Buehler will come in the third inning when Knowles has let up five runs and three home runs in the first two. 215-592-9494. Jordan in Princeton, you're on WIP. What's up, Jordan?
Good afternoon on an Eagles Eve, gentlemen. It is feeling fantastic today, isn't it?
Yep.
You're always feeling fantastic, Jordan.
I like feeling good. It's much better than feeling bad. I highly recommend it.
Absolutely. What do you got, Jordan?
So today,
can't do it anymore. Can't do it anymore. It's not on you, Jordan. It's on us. The delay.
How do we fix that, though? Yeah. What do we do about that?
Well, we could.
Never mind.
What can we do? What can we do, Spike?
Well,
Rod's standing over there.
It's like every show we do. Can't talk to the caller.
Imagine how bad Creed's going to sound.
I don't care. It'll sound good in here.
T.O. going to sing Creed, by the way?
That's the goal?
Well, he's going to be here.
That's what I mean. You're still going to do it, right?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. If T.O. knows the words, he can sing
along.
Is
there any guest you wouldn't do Creed for?
No.
If we had Jalen on,
like
maybe.
Nope.
Not do it too.
Yep. Oh, Jalen through Creed would be amazing.
Would be incredible. The look on his face, the look on T.O.'s face will be great as well. I also think we're going to have a festive atmosphere during Creed and during T.O. as well.
Do you think he's expecting you guys to sing higher, though, if you're doing a Creed
song? No, we're not doing that today. All right. New question.
I'm just saying, how many fires can you start over here?
Yeah.
T.O.'s probably like, oh, you mean higher, right? Yeah.
Elliot, you brought up Kevin Petullo. I will start with you. What do you think the chances are that Kevin Petullo is not the offensive coordinator first game of next season?
What?
40%?
30%? Really? 40%?
I mean, Brian Johnson.
40% because he gets a head coaching job or because it doesn't go well?
There is some combo in there. I think Kevin Petullo is a good coach, but promoting from within has not worked for this team. So Brian Johnson lost a job after 1 year. Mike Groh might have been here for 2 years, if I'm not mistaken, but he was short-lived overall. I think Petullo would be a good head coach. I just think him and Sirianni are too repetitive together. Like, they've been together for all these years. Nick has said Petullo has helped in every decision he's made since he's been here. So,
and that's why he's not going anywhere.
And I'm not sure why I'm supposed to believe it'll be any different. And maybe they'll be good enough that it won't matter. But my worry is, on a year where you're going to need to spice things up a little bit, can they do it?
My question would be, Ike,
they can do it. The X's and O's don't move by themselves. It's the Jimmys and the Joes that make the X's
there
and O's look good.
That's what a real football guy
is. So, I mean, it's the players executing that's going to help the situation out. It would have to be awfully bad for Nick Sirianni to fire his good friend after 1 year.
So that is a good point.
It had to be pretty bad for that to happen. I don't see that happen.
That is a good point where I think Kevin Petullo being fired would be a really, really tough pill for Nick Sirianni to swallow. So I agree that
when you know he stood on the table
him. That's a good point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I bet there was some conversation between...
About bringing somebody in.
Yeah, with Sirianni and Howie and Jeff, and they said, look, you've earned this, but this is your choice. Like, you will be judged on some way, on some level, ultimately, by you making this decision. Because it wasn't in his hands the way before. And that leads me to question two on the Petullo thing. I know that Nick was involved in some way in offense last year. He's involved in everything.
Yep.
But I would also say that them going outside the organization, hiring, hiring Kellen Moore, I think he was probably less apt to go in and saying, I think we should do this, than he might have been if he knew the guy. So I guess my bigger question is we know that we think Nick Sirianni's not great at play calling. That's not what he does. Mm-hmm. But if the offense isn't going well, does he feel more empowered this year to go in there and tinker on his own because of the relationship that he has with Petullo as opposed to the relationship he may have had with Kellen Moore?
Yeah.
And do you think that's a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think it is. I honestly believe he helped Kellen Moore last year. Kellen Moore has never been known as an offensive coordinator that is a running offensive coordinator. When he was in Dallas, he helped Dak Prescott become one of the better passing quarterbacks in the league. So them adjusting and going to the run game last year, as last I remember, when they did it in 2021, Nick Sirianni was here. Right? I know he's a wide receiver coach, but Shane Steichen isn't here anymore. So the idea of the running game and leaning on the running game, they did that in 2021, right? Where they were just a running football team. I'm only saying this to say that Nick Sirianni, I think, if he feels the need to put his imprint on the offense or have more input, I think he'll do that. I think he'll entrust Kevin Petullo to do his thing. He's going to be a part of the meetings. He's going to be a part of the game planning. But the flow of the game and those type of things, I think he's going to lead to Kevin Petullo and Jalen Hurts. Right? And here's the other thing. If things aren't going well, what do you think he's going to do? Just let the thing crash? Of course he's going to.
Well, we saw last year.
They're going to have to do something.
Yeah. I think Nick has always been more involved in the offense.
And I think he was a big reason why the offense changed to what it changed to last year.
100%.
Yeah. Well, because the offensive linemen went to Nick. They didn't go to Kellen.
Well, and
at
also,
least by the way that the story is told.
And Nick and Jalen talked a lot during the bye week about the offense, right? So I think Nick was involved a lot with that. I also think that play calling is an important role for sure. But Nick and Jalen probably have way more influence over this offense than whoever the offensive coordinator is. Nick sets like the tone of what the offense is. They watch the film together throughout the week, deciding what the plays should be, what they like on third down, what they like on red zone. Jalen calls, I would guess, almost half the plays that are run on the field anyway. Mm-hmm. So I do think Nick, when you say, you know, he was involved to a certain degree last year, I'm not like pushing back on you. I'm just saying I think he is more involved than maybe the premise.
Than we realize.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
I agree. And these guys are of like mind. When we sat down with Coach Sirianni a couple weeks ago, he talked about that when I asked him about that. And I asked him, why does he trust Kevin Petullo? They're like, he's like his right-hand man.
Well, not to mention, Jeffrey and Howie would not have hired Sirianni 2.0 as offense coordinator if they didn't believe in Sirianni as an offensive guy. Like, they were behind the scenes last year. They saw how the offense – Kevin Petullo was important because he brought new ideas. He added certain things. But in terms of the overall offense, I still think Nick had way more to do with it than Kellen Moore did.
Yeah.
Hmm. Overall?
I don't know.
I agree. I think Kellen Moore was just calling plays.
I don't know if that was the plan going in.
I don't think that was Kellen Moore. Watch this offense in New Orleans and see if it looks like last year.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you on that. 215-592-9494.
Now, they don't have the players that we have here.
Right. They don't got the Jimmys and the Joes.
Coming up next, I've got some over-unders for Elliott and Ike for the Eagles this year. Okay. We have some normal stat ones, but then some fun ones that I threw in there as well.
Not you, so Jack.
Well, Jack as well. But yeah. Jack's going to take the under on all the passing ones. And if he takes the over, he's just going to go, daw, afterwards.
I just hope they hit Kadonis.
And he's watching the Tigers-Mets game. So, I mean, like, what are you?
Hells is about to blow it again.
There we go.
And Jalen Lowlights.
All right. We're at Rally in Royersford at McGurk's. Presented by Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.
You've been listening to the best of the Phillies on Sports Radio 94 WIP.